Hello and good morning. I'm Lisa Jordan from Florida State. I have permission from my co-authors to just go as single author for today, but of course I do this work with other folks who helped me with this research, Tony Stallings, also at Florida State University, and Richard Gregg and Chariot Stokes at Florida A&M University. And what we are looking at here is the ways to use GIS tools, what we're calling citizen mapping, to promote environmental justice. And what I hope you get from this presentation is that you can look up this presentation later and use it as a resource. So we'll go through a lot of different tools we've used, and of course you don't have to take notes, but something you can look back at and see. These are some of the freely available techniques, methods, and things that we were using in our case study in Tallahassee, Florida. So for this presentation, I'll first go over some Web 2.0 and citizen mapping software, techniques, methods that are used widely in public health, in environmental justice studies, but also generally. And then I'll give the case study we looked at in Tallahassee, Florida, using these techniques to promote environmental justice, and conclude with some comments on future use of these techniques and potential misuse of them. So first, Web 2.0 and citizen mapping. I suppose one of the greatest barriers to this is the jargon, so I want to cut past the jargon of using these tools and encourage you to begin looking them up on your own, because there's a lot of really neat, freely available, easy to learn, accessible mapping techniques. And what Web 2.0 and citizen mapping is just extending the social network technologies to the domain of geography and mapping. So just as there's Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, there are geographic equivalents of this through sources like Google Earth, GeoCommons, which is a geo-warehousing website, Microsoft's Photosynth and Bing Maps. These are mapping applications. And of course, the ArcGIS Online now has maps for everyone. Cartography 2.0 stems from this idea of Web 2.0. It's making these tools in geography and mapping accessible to a broader audience. And increasingly, we get this idea of citizens as sensors. In geography, we talk about remote sensing, so data we collect from satellites, right? But instead, we're increasingly relying upon people as collecting this information for us. So citizens as sensors is using interested groups, interested populations, and collecting and mapping the data themselves. And we use mashups or combinations of websites and techniques over the internet to display information. And important to all this is something, jargon again, we call metadata, which is data about the data. So ways to describe the data, what you're looking for, so that you can find the information you need to present the arguments that you want to make. NeoGeography is this new geography, and open source is free and open software that you can manipulate both the software code and download it and use it freely. So that's just some introduction to the jargon that you hear related to citizen mapping. So we really see this as a democratization of access to the software and access to the data. In addition to the Google Earth and so forth, what supports these kind of applications is the openness of data. These are two examples of increasing openness in data. One is called OpenStreetMaps, where people upload and submit their GPS and mapping of streets. This is for Tallahassee, but of course I think it's been more instrumental in developing countries, particularly Haiti, at mapping after the earthquake. And numerous other countries have submitted and volunteered their data on roads maps. Wikimapia is another example of this open data collection. It was obvious as soon as Obama entered the presidency the increase in transparency for geographic data. And the website data.gov opened, and there's all kinds of increased access to EPA data and a variety of health data through this data portal. And it only gets better the more I've seen it over the past few years. It's increasing open access to data and increasing usability of the data that exists. I think Florida, to brag a bit, has one of the best Department of Health websites that provides here an example at the census tract level, data from collected from vital statistics, birth and death records. Here's a percent of births of low birth weight babies looking at the census tract level in Tallahassee, around Leon County. So, and that's all accessible. You don't need to know how to use a map. You don't need to know how to use special software. It's all through the web browser. So that's part of this idea, making these maps, making this information highly accessible to a wide variety of users, not just some nerd expert in GIS tucked away in a cubicle, but making it something accessible to everybody. There's also all of these wonderful open applications to begin using this software. The software before using GIS has largely been in the domain, I think, of something private, right? Something very expensive to buy software packages to use GIS. And this is increasingly not the case. Of course, we've had EpiInfo, but in expanding on this, Quantum GIS, Map Window, UDIG, all these are open source GIS packages, so they can do all the stuff that you can do in a commercial package, but they're completely free. There's also a lot of software and training developed for this. I've developed some of it, but it's just to be aware that there's this variety of open software to map and analyze data. In addition to the regular GIS packages, there's also a variety of specialized tools to do statistical analysis, R, GeoDa, STARS. All these are freely accessible software for doing more advanced data analysis. And then there's increasingly stuff that just are GIS applications over the web. So if you want to map addresses, you have an Excel spreadsheet with a list of addresses. You can instantly map them using these web applications like Batch Geo. You can create your own maps, web mashups using something like Yahoo Pipes. So if you weren't aware of these, I just wanted to show you and demonstrate that there's all these applications that I think make this kind of analysis increasingly accessible. We see this use, here's the Google Earth used to map the avian flu. This is an example that Nature has published. And this is, time series, space and time series analysis. There we go. So from the original data set, over time, watching the expansion of both avian flu, data collected on birds, and data collected in humans. All these data points are associated with the number of populations affected, exact latitude and longitude coordinates for these. And these applications have been really useful in showing how spatial analysis can be done, but it's also something you can get for free, map for free, and begin using with pretty little, minimal training in mapping. A wonderful example of how this can be used in practice is an older example, but this is mapping the Pune slum in India. There was no census data collected by India, so they decided to collect it themselves. They used a few GIS experts and then mapped the slum, and then were able to use the maps that they made on their own to argue that they should have plumbing, and you know they needed more resources, they needed some facilities. So some basic access to health, the map was a powerful tool to promote that. So it was people within the slum mapping their own area, and that was a very handy example of the potential of web mapping. And we see newer examples using Google Earth. Here's an example that was mapping food and exercise locations. This was in New York, but it's an idea, and I've seen this used for mapping tobacco advertising by kids in high school. They go to the different outlets and map where advertising was visible and so forth. It's something you don't need expertise in, as these particular authors explain. You can create these maps with little training and solicit help. Kids are good sources for help for this because they quickly figure out the tools, and then you can create powerful visualizations to encourage and promote public health issues. So our case study in Tallahassee, Florida, began about a year and a half ago. We had an environmental history conference in the city. And they asked us in the geography department to do an example of how to use GPS and how to use GIS. And so we had a classroom set of GPS devices and brought them to the conference. And we gave attendees the GPS. And we had an interesting case study at the time to work with, which there was a proposed biomass plant that was to be sited really right downtown. And so we wanted to illustrate this, and we gave everyone GPS, and in one afternoon we showed everyone how they could go and take coordinates. We went to the site, took pictures, took video, and then that same afternoon we could upload it all to the web. And the time frame it took to learn to use the software, used to learn the hardware, it was very short. So with that short amount of time, we could come up with some product, a visualization of where this proposed biomass site was going to exist. Now, there was all kinds of problems with this proposed site. They didn't do a lot of community outreach or investigation before they proposed the site. It was sort of behind the scenes. There was this deal with the FSU Magnet Lab, High Energy Magnet Lab, and the biomass site. And they were going to just sort of arrange to build this biomass site there. Biomass is renewable energy, but when it's located in a highly densely populated area, this particular site was going to pose potential problems due to emissions from the site, some particulates. After mapping through the conference and sort of the ideas proposed, just an example, took cameras and went to the site, found the elementary schools and schools near the site. Here's Innovation Park. Mapped some videos and posted them online instantly. There began a little discussion of maybe the problems posed with this site. In particular, using just demographic data from the web, this site was proposed to be in a majority black neighborhood, one of the more highly densely populated neighborhoods in Tallahassee. And it instigated a lot of interest. So we got the NAACP got involved. A number of physicians locally argued they had data on the zip codes and found that, okay, in this area there are already elevated risks of asthma in this area. So siting a biomass plant right downtown wasn't a great idea. The map didn't create the community interest, but the map helped bridge multiple data sources together and get people thinking about some of the problems of siting this plant where it was proposed to be site. In the end, because of community presentations, outcry, the biomass plant withdrew its proposal to site the plant there. There were problems and lessons to be learned beyond the issue of mapping. But this example demonstrates how mapping, how activism can work to promote environmental justice issues. The plant was withdrawn, and they tried to locate elsewhere, Gadsden County, an even poorer rural county. They tried to locate there as well, sort of with the advertising, the mapping, and getting physicians and local community involved. They ended up not siting there either. Now, I can't really say about the details about the biomass plant. I think biomass has a lot of potential. It can be done with low emissions, but I think it needs to have some, of course, community involvement and decision in siting the location, and not to be, done behind the scenes. So future uses and misuses. This is GIS and all these open tools and open data are mechanisms for community collaboration. There's increasing barriers to access. There's a lot more data, a lot more software, and a lot more analysis tools that are easily accessible. And they can create compelling visualizations that can persuade policymakers help and aid targeting policy towards specific high-risk populations. So there are a lot of uses for these tools. There's also a lot of potential for misuses. There are limits to representation. We can't show everything on the map. And there's problems with availability of complete metadata, so data about the data. We have issues to think about and sort through as data becomes more accessible and more commonly collected, particularly by citizens or interested users. There's, of course, always challenges in finding causality when you're just making the map. And there continue to exist inequities in access, know-how, and time to using this software. Nevertheless, my optimism with this is that GIS is becoming a tool used by experts, as shown in previous presentations, but increasingly something that I think is accessible to a wide variety of users. Even public health folks without any background in mapping can begin picking up some of these tools, some of these data sources, and use these tools to create visualizations, representations, either in promotion of environmental justice, reducing health inequities, or other public health challenges that are being dealt with. So that's to conclude. We've described these Web 2.0 techniques, the case study of Tallahassee, and the future use and misuse. So, thank you.
Is there one or two questions to wrap up the session for Dr. Jordan? Yes, right here in the front.
I had a question about what kind of method do you use to disperse your products, and then also who had ownership or the rights over the products that were created in the project?
No one had ownership, and they're all freely available.
They're all public domain.
Great, I guess the Creative Commons license and stuff.
Oh, and also, how did you go, what were the means of distributing the data and the products that you created?
All the data that we used were freely accessible data. They were data used from the Florida Department of Health posted online, or they were data collected from the U.S. Census. So we were using existing data sets that were already freely published. That's kind of the idea of this case study, is that I guess there was some data collection going to the site and taking pictures. And the pictures were uploaded on Flickr, the video uploaded on YouTube, so those were all public domain after that data collection took place. That was Google Earth, yeah. Google Earth.
And I think just kind of following up with the question, the interaction between you and the community, I understand that you had sort of a conference or something where you went out and demonstrated these, but what was the catalyst that brought community to the policymakers to insist on not locating that?
I would say it's really Dr. Greggs and Charette Stokes, who's his PhD student, and their involvement with the NAACP, as well as community members and folks at the Florida Department of Health, sort of coalescing this data and the arguments together, using the visualizations as an argument against citing the biomass plant. There were other, the time that this citing took place, there was a U.S. News and World Report on the most polluted cities and environmental justice. So it had some good timing with some other public media that they used that to their advantage. So the public was involved to some extent, but I would say it was, I think, perhaps more persuasive were these few, there are a couple physicians that really took on this issue of the elevation of asthma and exposure to asthma in this particular high density area. So I think they, and actually getting the site withdrawn, you know, that they were really instrumental in making their voice the loudest and preventing it from being cited there.
One final question in the back.
When you started your presentation, you talked about a website that has resources, I think, or?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to recommend this. In addition to this PowerPoint slide, I have handouts that I posted through the APHA website, and I also have notes written on the bottom of each slide. Of course, my own website has links to all of these sources, so the idea was you see all these lists, so there's all these open source GIS health applications, but I've got the URLs to all of those. So the idea was to present, there's all these tools there. I have the URLs and additional information if you want to begin using these for your own work. Let's see. Yeah, it is on the first slide.
And also, you know, so if you look up the session number on the main meeting site, when you look at under her abstract, there should be a link to whether it's PowerPoint or a PDF of the presentation. I think that's what she's
referring to. Yeah, sorry it's so long. It's www.coss.fsu.edu/publichealth/ljordan, and yeah, it should be the link to this should be in our session, so you could download this site and then the handouts that went with it. But I have other documents as well. I'm teaching a course on medical geography that's using quantum GIS exclusively. When that course is finished, I'll post all the slides on how to use that free software. So. Access to that.
Thank you very
much.
One, all right, go ahead.
Do you
That varies quite a bit. I think there, if you want to use an actual piece of GIS software, I would suggest Quantum GIS because I think the interface is very user-friendly. The tools are intuitive. To go along with this, there are a series of tutorials already posted that go step by step, maybe 10 or 12. And these include like an introduction to what GIS is, what you're doing in each of the steps. And not that I know of including videos yet. I'll publish my online publish my manual of tutorials as well for the health applications. For other things, then maybe EpiInfo has some older stuff, but it's a kind of older piece of software.
Okay, well, thank you very much to the entire panel. I think that's going to just be, I hope, personally, I hope next year.